21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These are the fundamental truths upon which our nation was founded, and they are illustrated by the new exhibit at the world-renowned American Visionary Arts Museum on Key Highway in Baltimore. Dare I say it, it's their best ever. Get over there the next free weekend you have and take all of your out-of-town visitors to AVAM to show it off. While there, do me a favor and stop by their incredible gift shop called Sideshow and buy one of my books that are on special sale at Sideshow in honor of their Life, Liberty, and Pursuit of Happiness exhibit. Call 443-872-4926. That's 443-872-4926 or on the web at avam.org.
I'm on a mission for the King. He told me to smile, and he told me to sing, and I can't get around here doing my own thing, for I'm on a mission for the King.
Whoa, yeah, indeed we are, friends. Every one of us has got a job. That's right, we got a job. And, of course, this is 21st Century Radio. And we're twisting the night away here on 21st Century Radio Bar and Grill. And, of course, our executive producer and research assistant and my boss, who pushes me around all the time, is Laura Kortner. And our engineer, the guy who picks me up from time and time after Laura pushes me down the steps, is Jake Bryant. He can bench press 580 pounds. That's the reason why he can pick me up. Because I'm only 522 pounds. Of course, I don't even think I can make 200 pounds. And, of course, our guest for the next 20-some minutes is John Michael Greer. The book is The Art and Practice of Geomancy, Divination, Magic, and Earth Wisdom of the Renaissance, Red Wheel, Wiser Books. And, again, www.aoda.org, which is also linked on the front page of 21st Century Radio, where you can order the book. And I'm going to make the same offer that I do when I think a book is so important, you should have it in your library to use. Not to make it just look nice on your table, but you can use this book. This is a functional book. It's got more illustrations than Venezuela ever had, whatever that meant. You know, this one of the most important things, I think, is explanations of things, which so many other books, unfortunately, do not do in this area. This book, if you get this book, and you can prove it, all you got to do is prove it to me with a receipt, and you can have your choice of any book that I've written. Any of them. So, 410-922-6680. You just call Jake Bryant and say, I'm going out there and buying four or five copies right now, because that's what you need, because you're going to need it for your friends. This is the kind of thing that I think your entire family would really enjoy learning and knowing about. Now, John Michael, I think most people think that it doesn't make any difference when you do stuff. You just do it. But obviously, hours of the day are important. Timing is very important in the geomantic tradition. Why are they important?
Well, it's an interesting question where this particular mode of timing comes from. We have astrology has this particular logic where, you know, certain positions of the planets correspond to certain movements in the human psyche, certain movements in society, and so on. But there's also this parallel tradition of planetary or geomantic hours, which are not quite clock hours. It's basically 1/12th of the time between sunrise and sunset, or between sunset and sunrise, so they change length during the year, making life kind of fun. But each day has a ruling planet. Each hour has a ruling planet in the planetary hours. In geomantic hours, each day and each planet, or each day and each hour, have ruling geomantic figures. And by choosing an hour on a day when the figure that you want, the particular energy or quality of that figure is governing that hour, you do you do actions corresponding to that figure during that hour, and they work better. Why should this be? I haven't the least idea. The logic is what was doubtless known to the ancients, but they didn't bother to tell us. So all we have is this tradition. The unnerving thing is that it works. Now, maybe that's just the effect of selective memory or something, but it certainly doesn't seem to work that way. I've seen very many times that people have got a hold of this kind of system and said, okay, well, let's see, I'm trying to get, I need to apply for a job. So I need, the person in the personnel office to look favorably on the application. So they look through this and they find they find an hour, let's say an hour of the figure acquisition on Thursday, which is the day of Jupiter, and they put in the application and they get the job.
Well, you have enough charts here to establish a book on charts.
Doing a book on the planetary hours or the geomantic hours is something that I've considered. It's one of those odd things that are passed down from older times that don't seem to make sense at all from within our sort of rationalist view of the world, but which have been used successfully for a very, very long time. We don't know why they work, but they seem to.
Well, I got to tell you, back there in 1965, when I first heard about this stuff, I laughed my things off.
Mm-hmm.
I could not believe it. I could not believe that other people actually would take this seriously.
We're silly enough to do this kind of thing.
How dumb can you get, I thought. And, of course, I remember the very first time, John, that I realized that there might be something to astrology, and I was an idiot enough to go to all of my wonderfully intellectual friends and say, hey, look at this. I can't believe this. Oh, boy. The first thing that happened was, Bob, you got to be crazy. What the hell is this? You were just a great agnostic atheist, and now you turn into this, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, meaning in life is extremely important, and I think that these kind of divination systems have a lot to do with or deal with meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything Dr. Viktor Frankl or Abraham Maslow or any of these guys knew, they knew about the importance of meaning to life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I noted that earlier, a long time ago, that the secrets of occult philosophy and practice aren't secret because somebody decided to hide them. They're secret because they can't be understood and used until the person trying them understands and use them has a certain inner experience. Experience to magicians is extremely important, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's I think the reason people get into the esoteric traditions. They don't just want to believe. They want to put it to the test.
Mm-hmm. That's yeah.
And this whole thing about secrecy is so silly because you get these people who are just up in arms about anything involving secrecy. If it's secret, it must be evil. Not just bad, you understand. But
hey, you said that pretty good there, John.
Yeah,
I've had some good practice.
I've always had the thought of being a mad scientist at a particular career track. That kind of thing. Yeah. But if it's secret, it must be bad. But these are not people, presumably, who would want the details of their sex lives all over the front page of the local newspaper. There is such a thing as a point to privacy.
Mm-hmm.
But the deeper point of secrecy is that, on the one hand, you've got these things that you're not going to understand until you experience them. I don't know if you've ever read a hot sex scene written by someone who's never had sex. You can sometimes find them on the internet these days.
Immoral. John Michael.
Nonetheless, I'm sure you can find them quite readily, as can all of our readers. But they're not so much immoral as incredibly funny. Because if somebody has not had that experience, their attempts to understand it are going to fall very short.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way, you get rantings of who's the current round of Richard Dawkins, the current God basher, out there pounding his fist on the table and insisting, basically holding up a caricature of religion, and saying religion is bad, this kind of stuff. And it's obvious that he's never had any of the experiences that make religion, that make spirituality meaningful to people. If he'd had those experiences, he wouldn't be such an idiot about it.
Well, yes, it's true. I think that one's ability to gosh, it's going to sound so corny, but one's ability to be empathic to others' needs, especially at this time, is exceedingly important.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a lot of uncertainty, more uncertainty than most people think is out there, because we've been told things are going to get a lot better and we're moving on the way up and all that other kind of stuff. And we are in some ways, but we've yet to really see what's going to happen here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other great things about this book is that when you get further back into after page 172, somewhere around there, mm-hmm. you get into geomantic meditation. What I love the way you discuss the difference between Eastern methods and Western methods of meditation,
mm-hmm.
because most Westerners don't realize that there's a whole Western method here.
Yeah, that was one of the other things that mostly got lost, although a little later, it was something, Western meditation was taught in churches until about 100 years ago. You would go to church, and you'd go to Sunday school, you'd learn to pray, you'd learn to meditate, but it was a different kind of meditation. And about the same time that the Eastern systems of meditation came flooding in by way of the Theosophical Society, Western religions dropped their meditation traditions like a hot rock, which probably is one of the reasons why they're losing people so fast and why they have become so irrelevant. If you don't have a basis in meditation, if you don't have that sort of inward experience of self, there's not much you can really do spiritually except, go through the motions.
Well, you understand ancient Latin. Is this correct?
Well, I can read the ancient and also Renaissance and medieval Latin, yes.
So that means that you're aware of the Mass of the Holy Eucharist?
Oh, yeah.
Now, what an experience that is.
Oh, yeah.
That is one of the most profoundly mm-hmm. spiritual experiences mm-hmm. of connecting oneself with other spiritual beings
yeah.
at that time.
Uh-huh.
And I think that really is making that connection, because I was going to be a priest at one time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that when I started to talk to them about the Dead Sea Scrolls and things like that,
That's always a bad career.
That's what you don't do. But I didn't know that. I thought they believed. I honestly thought. I was so naive, John.
Uh-huh.
I really believed that. Hey, look at this.
Look at this marvelous stuff.
Yeah.
Why aren't you just adopting it? Well,
and they, of course, the first thing they said is, well, the Dead Sea Scrolls, number one, are forgery, so you don't bother with that. And that's what the bishop and everybody else was relating to me. And then after I said, look, wait a second, they're not forgeries. And then they said, of course, well, don't worry about them because they were written 200 A.D., not B.C., so they're not important at all. Oh, well, obviously.
Well, most of the New Testament was still being rewritten about then.
Yes, it sure was up into the 5th century.
Didn't want to get into that.
So, but the process of meditation, and mm-hmm. I'm so glad that you had this in the book, because it's badly needed in the West here.
Well, the thing about Western meditation is that, as with Western culture generally, it places an important focus on the thinking mind.
Correct.
And we don't, we do a lot of thinking in our culture, but we don't know how, most of us these days. We don't know how to use our minds effectively, and so we end up, chasing through various kinds of nonsense that actually 500 years ago people were very good at saying, no, don't do that. You need to test your thought. You need to test your thoughts against this. You need to check your thoughts this way. Here are these habits. Here are these processes. Here's this training that will enable you to think your way out of a wet paper bag. And, one of these days I want to write a book that is on the Renaissance mind techniques, how to think, how to meditate using the old methods of discursive meditation, thinking meditation, and how we can actually learn how to think again instead of just kind of parroting the media at ourselves. No reflection of current. This kind of talk thing at least involves interesting ideas. So much of it is such a wasteland.
It sure is. Now, also, mm-hmm. imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, imagination is extremely important. It's
the tool that we use to make the world.
Yeah, well, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the imagination is really it's the core faculty of the human mind. We don't actually experience the world around us. We imagine it. We take these little glimpses of color and shape, these sounds, these scents, all of these sensory perceptions that sort of come pouring into our minds by way of the five senses, and we assemble them into a world with our imagination. We use the stories that we tell about the world. We use the sort of patterns, the mandalas, if you want to call them that, to structure a world, and we do it with imagination. And so a huge amount of what we think is out there, is just, you know, as out there as solid as a rock, is actually something we've created. We've created ourselves using cultural templates. If you look at art, you can see this. You look at art from the Western tradition, it's got this very straight linear perspective. It's got these, you know, physical objects at precise locations and everything. And it's the world the way we imagine it. You look at Eastern art, you look at tribal art, and you're in a completely different world. And these people, the people who do that, those arts, are perceiving the world in a completely different way. Now, we very often get caught up in our imagining so much that we forget that we're imagining them. We lose control over them. And one of the things that the esoteric traditions around the world are about, and this is, you know, tribal shamanic traditions, Eastern religions, Western spirituality, you name it, it's about getting control of our imagination again so we can differentiate between what is out there and what we're projecting onto what's out there.
Well, let me quote somebody that I think knows what he's talking about. They say this: to call something imaginary nowadays is to label it as unreal and unimportant. Magicians know, however, that imagination is the most important power human beings have. Imagination is the ability to reshape our experiences into new forms, and it's by way of imagination that we assemble the flurry of experiences around us into a world that can be comprehended, and it's by way of imagination that we can reshape that world. Now, that's an extraordinary quote.
Well, thank you. That's from my chapter on meditation visionary stuff.
Hey, you're right. That's right. Yeah, that's who wrote that.
That's who wrote that. I've said something like that one way or another in about half the books I've written, because it's really one of the keys of the whole shebang.
Yes, it is.
Going back to when I was originally learning, going through the kindergarten level of this stuff back in the 1970s, you know, imagination shaped by will.
Mm-hmm.
There's the formula, you know.
Yeah, that's the formula.
Develop the will, develop your imagination, learn to apply them to yourself and to your experience of the world, and guess what? You know magic. That's what magic is, the art and science of causing change in consciousness in accordance with will.
Yeah. Well, I think that is really the key to how many of us, especially in the decades we have ahead, let's hope we got some decades, that are... decades and such that we can at least have relatively ordinary lives, because I'm sure we're going to be around for a while. It's just that it can get kind of messy. That by the use of imagination, you can change the world literally by that process of thinking and working towards serving others, helping others, prayer, and through the meditation, you can really change this world. And that's what I think we need. I think you mentioned somewhere in here, we have about a million people on this planet using systems like this. I think it would make one hell of a difference.
I think it would.
In the future.
I think if people were simply to grasp the fact that much of what they're seeing around them is the product of their own minds.
Yes.
Is being projected outwards. When people see enemies everywhere, what are they actually seeing? They're seeing their own hostility mirrored back by the world. When people see an ugly, ugly architecture, as though there's any other kind these days, what they're seeing is the ugliness of minds being projected out by way of our physical creations. And we can change so much. I mean, the world is infinitely flexible. There are limits. There are some very distinct limits that we've been trying to ignore. But generally speaking, we've ignored the limits that are there, and we've gotten all obsessed with limits that are internal to ourselves, and it's gotten us very screwed up.
It sure has. Now, if you had to sum up the message of this book in a couple of sentences, what would you say?
What I would say is, here is a tradition that will allow you to learn to tap into the knowledge you don't yet know you have, to guide your life more smoothly, to figure out what's going on around you. And here is a book that also gives you some tools that you can turn to shaping the world of your experience in various constructive ways. It's not omnipotent. It's not the solution to every problem. but it's a toolkit, and it's a toolkit that I think a lot of people could use these days in some very, very practical ways, as well as some very deeply spiritual ones.
Indeed. Well, I want to thank you for writing this book. Well,
thank you. I appreciate that.
You really have helped me a great deal, John Michael, and I will not forget that. I really won't, because it's at a time when I was just trying to check into some of my other older traditional systems that I've used over the last 40 years, and I thought I didn't want to. I wanted to re-understand something that caught my fancy, so to speak, about almost 50 years ago, but I couldn't understand what I was reading about, and I would read about it. And this book makes it all understandable, and I think anyone of even limited intelligence can get a great deal out of this.
It's a simple system. That's one of the things that
made
it so hugely popular back in the day. You don't have to know fancy math. You don't have to know. It's not a complicated approach. It's actually fairly simple.
Well, thank you for joining us, John Michael Greer.
Thank you very much for having me on.
You're welcome. The Art and Practice of Geomancy, Divination, Magic, and Earth Wisdom of the Renaissance, Red Wheel, Wiser Books, www.aoda.org, which is also linked on the front page of 21stCenturyRadio.com, where you can order the book. And when we return, Lisa Stromboli, acupuncture at the Ruscomb Mansion and the rewarding experiences of community nursing. We'll be back in just a few minutes, so get a haircut and shine your shoes. If you're a business owner or executive seeking growth yet determined to cut wasteful costs, consider outsourcing your whole marketing department to The Selling Well. The Selling Well offers businesses truly superior marketing services without all the overhead costs associated with employing a full-time marketing executive. Learn more online at theSellingWell.com. That's theSellingWell.com, named after one of our greatest symbols of prosperity, the well. Visit theSellingWell.com or call The Selling Well's managing partner, Plato Hieronymus, at 443-939-1890. TheSellingWell.com.
Zoe Hieronymus here. Do you ever wonder how biblical women dealt with stress? They experienced famine, war, lack of water, shortage of shelter, and inequality in their culture overall. But somehow, the seven prophetesses of Israel all rose to great leadership as a warrior, midwife, judge, royal queen, and more. Find out how you can be a queen. Kabbalah gives us all the tools for becoming the most we can be. Learn how to create peace in your life and love of others in your heart. Read my book, The Kabbalistic Teachings of the Female Prophets, the Seven Holy Women of Ancient Israel. Visit www.sevenholywomen.com. That's www.sevenholywomen.com. Or visit amazon.com to get my book, The Kabbalistic Teachings of the Female Prophets.
This is Dr. Nick Begich, author of Earth Rising, The Revolution, Angels Don't Play This Harp. You're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. You know, I'm trying to figure out which instrument they're playing at that particular time. It sounds like one of those instruments that our dear friends in Telesma play, doesn't it? Is that peculiar? Okay, friends, I think one of the things that I enjoy so much as being affiliated with individuals that are dedicated to the healing processes and elevating consciousness and awareness of others. And I'm very excited to introduce to you our next guest, who is a new practitioner joining us at the Ruscomb Mansion. Reading her bio, I get the impression that this woman truly gets it as far as our mission of service to the community is concerned at Ruscomb. Her name is Lisa Stambolis, and she is a licensed acupuncturist with a master's in acupuncture from the Thai Sophia Institute in Columbia, Maryland. Lisa comes to us with an extensive background in community nursing, which we will hear more about in her interview tonight. And she is a registered nurse as well as a certified nurse practitioner. She was born in Southern California. Wow, what nice karma that must be to be born in Southern California. Well, boy, Lisa, you must have lived right the last time. Into a family with ethnic heritage of Greek and Italian. Both her parents were first-generation immigrants. Lisa has lived in Baltimore for 23 years. She earned her both her undergraduate and graduate degrees from the University of Maryland in Baltimore, specializing in pediatrics. Her first 5 years of clinical nursing was at Johns Hopkins at the Pediatric Emergency Room and the Children's Center, which she remembers as a great clinical learning experience. She has been a nurse for 22 years and a nurse practitioner for 15, and though she's been focusing on pediatrics for over 20 years, she has been surprised to find that she enjoys working with adults just as much, and her new acupuncture practice has so far been exclusively with adults of all ages. Welcome to 21st Century Radio, Lisa Stambolis.
Thank you, Dr. Bob, for having me on the show.
So, you've been in Balmer for 23 years.
So I must have done something wrong, because now I'm freezing. I'm really, really cold.
Yeah, but look, wait a second. Yeah, but how much time did you get to spend out there in Southern California, dear?
You know, my particular nuclear family, we moved when I was 10. So we moved around a lot. I've lived in a few different places in the United States, and I lived in Germany for several years. And I ended up in Baltimore in Maryland because my parents moved back here.
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved back to California, and all my extended family live in California. So I get back there a couple of times a year.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
Boy. Yeah. Boy. I've always wanted to be in Southern California, especially way Southern California, How do you pronounce that, dear? The Baja or Baja,
the Baja
Peninsula?
Yeah. Yeah, I've never been there, but I'd like to go, too. In fact, today I got a call from my sister.
Well, maybe we can go tomorrow. You got any time tomorrow?
Come
on, we ain't got nothing else to do.
She told me the sun was shining pretty strong and I should get out there. So let's go, Dr. Bob.
Of course. I'll leave my 17-degree. Dear, we live out here in Owings Mills, and Owings Mills is actually 2 degrees below the airport. But it's very strange out here. It's like we still got several inches of snow all over our ground out here, and we'll have it back. We'll probably have it till March, the way it is. Well, I forgot what we were doing here. Let's start with your first inspiration that you wanted to do something more for the community than a standard nursing career might provide. You say that while working at Johns Hopkins Pediatric Emergency Room and Children's Center, you became interested in public health. What kind of experience outside the hospital setting did you find?
Well, I was fortunate enough to find an amazing organization called Healthcare for the Homeless. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not. They're a national organization, and there's a Healthcare for the Homeless here in Baltimore City. And I had been working in the hospital, and I knew I didn't want to stay in the confines of a hospital. I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do, but in my training as a nurse, we do community health. We go out and work in the community with families and children. And when I finished my master's to be a nurse practitioner in pediatrics, I had this great opportunity to take a position with Healthcare for the Homeless as an outreach nurse practitioner. I worked with a team of other nurses and social workers, and we'd go out to shelters and soup kitchens, the street, wherever homeless people were, and provide healthcare to them.
Boy, that must have been quite a joy.
You know, it was. It was really rewarding work. And, you know, and it's just basic. We would have a couple of backpacks on our back, work out of our car, or if we were walking, it was just whatever we could carry. And people were so grateful.
I bet they were.
They were. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it wasn't a lot. Sometimes it was a Band-Aid. Sometimes people would say, wow, you're such an angel to be here. And it's like, you know, I didn't feel like it was an angel, but I just happened to have what they needed at that second. And
Well, what do you think that was inside of you? Was it your family experience that with your mom and dad that opened your heart enough to be able to work on that level?
You know, I'm not really sure. I did get a chance to travel a lot. And I think I always just really liked people. And I feel like I have a true calling to be a nurse, mm-hmm. you know?
I'll say. It's
I do.
Yeah, of course
and,
you do.
And I feel very fortunate for that, very lucky that I feel like that's my path to walk. But that's my destiny. That's what I'm here for. And then the work with healthcare for the homeless was so rewarding on so many different levels that I'm so grateful to have had that opportunity.
Well, I think you're going to be even more grateful as time goes on, dear, because I think that that is the wave of the future. That is what we're going to need to do to hold our planet together. That kind of service to others, that's the kind of service that that is compassionate, that mm-hmm. well, the kind of thing that Christ would do, which is you help others without the very thought of any thought of it, you're benefiting in any way. You know, you just do it because that's the thing to do when people need help. But out on the streets and in the heart of the community, you learned an important lesson working with the homeless. But in 1998, you began working with Baltimore City Health Department, another example of community health nursing at its best. What did you do for the health department?
Well, I would just say I still work for the health department. I work in a school-based health center. And it's kind of funny because I went from the extreme of healthcare for the homeless, which is working with no borders, really. There's not many boundaries. You're out. Every day is different. To working in a high school clinic where I'm there every day. And I don't know if you're familiar with school-based health centers.
Very little, dear.
Okay, well, let me tell you, because they're fantastic. Baltimore City, you know, has done a lot to help young people that they don't often get a lot of credit for, because they've been around about 20 years. School-based health centers are like a regular health center that you might find anywhere, only they're located inside the school. They're fully staffed. I'm a nurse practitioner. There's a nurse. There's two other paraprofessionals. But also we have substance abuse counselors and mental health therapists, all the sort of wraparound services that you need when you're working with people who are really under-resourced.
Well, you describe your labor of love years of providing health care to inner-city teens as entertaining. Well, I bet you that can be entertaining. Why did you choose that word?
I think entertaining is lighthearted, and it's funny because they are entertaining. Because if you've ever worked with young people, with teenagers, every day is different. They can make you laugh. They can make you cry and pull your hair out. But they're funny, and they have stories, and they're very unique. And you just never know what's going to happen with them from day to day. Sometimes it's couple drama, you know, because it's high school.
Yeah, what's an ordinary drama that's not too far out, but there's a little drama that you see that you have to work out with them.
Well, you know, teens are still teens, so there's often, you know, just the counseling about relationships and what are healthy relationships. Sometimes there's fighting. Sometimes a lot of what I see that's sort of the everyday drama is just the hardships of where these kids come from. Their lives are, they live in violent neighborhoods, and sometimes just getting to and from school is really hard.
I bet. It
takes a lot of energy. And so I feel really, again, grateful that I have a view into their inner life. And teens today, especially in Baltimore City or in any poor city, they have to deal with a lot of stuff. And what I see is kids who don't have parents, kids whose parents are in jail, kids whose parents are dead, whose parents have HIV, whose friends are killed, and they work, they take care of their siblings, they live with different aunts and uncles, and yet they still go to school.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, so I'm in awe of them, really.
Well, I am in awe of your ability to comfort and help these individuals at a time that could mean literally their entire future. because of the kind of things that they that go through their minds in those kind of experiences, especially during this time period. We're going to take a break. Lisa Stambolis, acupuncture at the Ruska Mansion, and the rewarding experiences of community nursing. For appointments or for information, we better get to the information in a few minutes, 410-493-0054, 410-493-0054, www.ruscombe.org.
Stuck in
6:30 a.m. until 8, only on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Next week on 21st Century Radio, my beloved Zahara makes an earlier than usual appearance on 21st Century Radio this week as we huddle around the microphone trying to keep warm and review the latest in 21st Century news. Sunday night at 8, 21st Century Radio, Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Zoe Hieronymus here. Visit my website, www.zoharaonline.com. That's Zohara, Z-O-H-A-R-A, online.com. Find podcasts of decades of radio interviews, journalism, and photography. Find links to experts worldwide and in Maryland for subjects that range from where to sail in Maryland to the latest in UFOs. Find out about artificial intelligence and spiritual pathways. Zohara Online is a hub for finding books, people, and organizations in the business of doing good. It's always an adventure without reservations. Visit my website, www.zoharaonline.com.
This is Dr. Sally Rhine Feather, the daughter of Dr. J.B. and Louisa Rhine that started the ESP research at Duke University many years ago, and now I'm the director of development of the Rhine Research Center. We still study ESP, psychokinesis, in Durham, North Carolina, and I have just appeared on the Bob Hieronymus show and have found that to be a very interesting and important experience. I think this kind of radio does so much for the public. It brings them information where they can get no other way and very interesting. Interesting, informal way. Bob is a great interviewer, so I'm hoping to be a fan now of this radio station and to promote it with every opportunity.
That was Aunt Sally. That's right. Oh, such lovely people. Such lovely people. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. Our guest is Lisa Stambolis, acupuncture at the Ruscombe Mansion, and the rewarding experiences of community nursing. For appointments or for more information, call 410-493-0054, www.ruscombe.org, ruscombe.org. Well, Lisa, you are obviously very committed to nursing and to serving people. And those people in society who have less than you do. What made you shift careers in midstream and start to look for something more?
Well, sometimes you hear about nurses getting burnt out or anybody working in high-stress positions. And I was starting to feel a little dissatisfied with my role as a practitioner of diagnosing symptoms and giving a medication. So I was feeling like there's more to well-being than this, mm-hmm. and that there's more inside of me to offer. I just didn't know what it was. And so that got me thinking what more I would like to do. I felt like something was missing in my practice. And so I started searching around. And I was at this crossroads, really professionally, where in nursing you either go on to get your PhD and do research, and I had an option to do that, but it just didn't inspire me. And someone suggested I just check out acupuncture and check out this fantastic school called Thai Sophia Institute in Laurel. And I'm like, well, okay. I had never heard of it. And I checked it out. It was amazing. I went to their open house, and I just felt like I was walking home.
Well, so that was about, was that about 5 years
ago?
That
was about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. How did you discover acupuncture again?
This is the thing. I'd already always been interested in different modalities. I knew about homeopathy. I've done meditation. I've had friends who have had acupuncture and massage, but I personally hadn't had it. But so I was searching for where did I want to go next in my own evolution as a healthcare provider. And I knew that I didn't want to go into research, that I'm really a hands-on person. So I started looking at what was more hands-on. And going to Thai Sophia and learning about acupuncture, it seemed like the perfect blend for me.
Well, could you tell us a little bit more about Thai Sophia and how they help you pass that crossroads in your career to find deeper meaning in your current nursing work?
Mm-hmm. Well, Thai Sophia Institute is an amazing watering hole. It's been around for, I think, around 30 years. It was the first acupuncture school, I believe, in the U.S. And what they offer at Thai Sophia, what they put a lot of emphasis for is in cultivating their practitioners, is to be a healing presence. And that really resonated with me because it wasn't just about being a technician, because I am a good technician as a nurse practitioner, diagnosing symptoms and using those analytical skills. But to go to a deeper level to be with people is one of the things that they had to offer. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Well, I think one way, I think when I was reading some of the things that you wrote, authentic and present at all times experiences are not the normal way traditional people work, except in the healthcare industry where you have to focus everything to make sure that, because if you're there to serve and to help and to alleviate illness or alleviate some difficulty, then it is really important that you be able to have those genuine, authentic experiences, because I think that assists the healing considerably.
Well, Dr. Bob, that's true for those of us who have been lucky enough to study outside the Western medical box.
Yeah.
But in Western medicine, in my experience and from what I've seen, that's not what the emphasis is on. And I think that's why a lot of nurses go into nursing. Mm-hmm. And because it is more holistic and you get to work with people on a lot of different levels. And so there wasn't that emphasis. And I think when people, I'll speak for myself, getting burnt out and learning a little bit about that, is that you stop being really present, you know. When you're really truly present, you're not thinking about what you're going to have for dinner.
That's right.
You know, you're not worried about what you did yesterday. Walk into the room. And nothing else exists except for me and the person I'm with. And that's what Thai Sophia puts a lot of emphasis on.
So do you not consider yourself just a healer?
Well, see, I don't consider myself a healer. I think there's people out there that I have seen who are true healers, who can put their hands on people and make magic happen. I think, to me, that term puts too much emphasis on me as being the person who makes something happen. I feel more like I'm the tonic of love and support for the work that needs to be done with the person, that the needles and the words I use as an acupuncturist are simply deep reminders that the person already has in them. It just sort of unlocks it, helps them become more aware.
That's understandable, sure.
Right?
Yeah, of course.
So for myself, I'm not comfortable using that term for myself.
When did you open your practice at Ruscom?
Oh, just recently, in September.
In September. That's a good old Virgo time. That's a way to serve, dear. It looks.
Is that right?
Yes, of course.
I don't know that.
Yeah, well, it's true. It's a, you know, that's one of the time periods of service, I think, is key to that time period, and service is perhaps one of the most important things all of us can do for everybody in any way, many different ways, that is. But as a matter of fact, are you still working as a high school nurse practitioner?
I am.
You are. You're doing that too? Do you have any hours are in your day, 78?
I do. Actually, I still work full-time with the health department as a high school nurse practitioner, and I'm in my 11th year, and I really love it. And at the same time, I'm starting my private practice at Ruscomb Mansion Tuesday evenings, late afternoon evenings, and on the weekend right now. Mm-hmm. My goal is to, over the next couple of years, build my private practice and, mm-hmm. and one day maybe just work part-time with high school or somewhere else in the community. I'm not really sure.
Well, for our new listeners, mm-hmm. please define what acupuncture is and what format of acupuncture is taught at Thai Sophia.
Well, acupuncture is a natural healing method. It enhances our body's own immunity and our recuperative power. It supports physical and emotional health. It improves all our functions and well-being as humans. It's safe, it's painless, and it's just a great way to treat a whole lot of health problems, whether they're emotional or physical. The type of acupuncture that is taught at Thai Sophia Institute is called Five Element. It's an ancient form of acupuncture, about 3,000 years old. I think there's only a few schools in the United States that teach Five Element acupuncture. It's rooted very much in nature, in the five elements in nature, and it's a very basic, nurturing type of health care.
Well, could you describe a typical visit to your office and what the standard protocol is for the first time or first visit?
Sure. The first visit is usually about an hour and a half, and during that hour and a half, we get to know each other. I do a full history, health history, and lifestyle history, and a physical. And then, depending on time, I will do the first acupuncture treatment, or depending on what's happening with the patient, wait till the next time. And usually then subsequent appointments are about an hour. Mm-hmm.
Do you see your patients once a month, or is it...
You know, everybody's different, right? Some people are seasonal, but most of my patients I see a handful of patients once a week. There's a few I see every other week. And the idea is that it not be a crutch, that, you know, we help restore balance. And I teach my patients different deep breathing exercises to help them be able to help themselves when they're at home.
Well, you know, I've heard acupuncture is especially helpful for those who are overcoming addictions. Doesn't Thai Sophia operate in partnership with an addictions clinic in Baltimore?
They do, in fact. I'm glad you brought that up. That's one of, it's a fantastic community health service that Thai Sophia partnerships with Penn North. And what it is it's called auricular acupuncture, and it's in both ears, five needles inserted in both ears, and for about 40 minutes. And it's in a group setting. So there's a group of people who are there for, they're in recovery from their substance abuse, but in conjunction with different group therapy, it's proven to be very, very successful. It's very relaxing. Mm-hmm. I'll just share with you, when I was a student and I went several times to do the treatment, I would put the needles in the client's ears, and then I also would get my own ears treated and sit in the group and do the 45-minute meditation.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's powerful in a group.
I bet you it is. And we've reached that powerful time of the hour when we have no more time, Lisa.
Okay.
This all went too fast. Lisa, acupuncture at the Ruscomb Mansion and the rewarding experiences of community nursing, thank you. God bless you for being so service-oriented. I think that if we have enough people service-oriented in the future, I think the plan's going to make they're going to do a pretty good job of it. I would hope that continues. Thank you for joining us. And for appointments, friends, call 410-493-0054, 410-493-0054.
The latest from Fox News on the most powerful names in talk. Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore. And